all the unique characters.
I do let them bang. Yeah, I'm a legend, man. I'm building my legs.
All the stories and perspectives featured weekly.
I wasn't fully committed to that choke, and I kind of sunk into it, started squeezing tighter, and I kind of heard him gurgle a little bit. I was like, oh.
And all the combat sports you could ask for in the best state in the U.S.
Like I said, Ohio versus the world. It's going to happen for sure. Watch out.
It'll be cool, man. I'm not worried about it. I'm going to show them why the Ohio MMA scene is, in my opinion, one of the best MMA scenes in the country.
This is Forged in OH.
IO.
OH.
IO.
OH.
IO.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 68 of Forged in Ohio. My name is Jake Murrin, and I'm the host of the podcast. As many of you know, Cage Thunder Next Gen Fight Series 1 took place just a few weeks ago. I was honored to be on commentary for that night, and today I'll be joined by the first winner from that great night of fights. He got back to his winning ways by submitting Malcolm Jackson in the first round in the co-main event. Was there some pre-fight beef between these two fighters, and was it his retirement fight? Well, let's find out now by bringing in Nick the Gremlin Lute from Route 250 Martial Arts. Thanks for coming on the show, Nick, and welcome to Forged in Ohio.
No problem, man. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, thanks for coming on the show. We could start in a lot of different ways, but I want to dive right into your co-main event win at Cage Thunder a couple of weeks ago, taking on Malcolm the Hitman Jackson. Can you just talk a little bit about the social media activity before the fight and, I guess, the tension that grew between the two of you?
It wasn't really anything at first. It was, you know, everybody wants to talk a little bit, you know, and I usually don't get too irritated, I guess, about it. But it was just disrespectful, you know, and I know everybody wants to talk, but he got on, he started getting upset, and I already had like an inkling that he probably wasn't going to make weight. So it's like, dude, you need to be trying to make weight. You don't need to be out here running your mouth, getting, you know, trying to get Facebook likes. Like, we're going to fight. That's what it's going to be. You know, just shut up.
Is it hard for a fighter to annoy you or get under your skin like that as much as he did?
Yeah, I guess. I mean, it's funny, though, because I think my coach likes to come to me with those type of things. He literally said, well, you know, statistically, when you're upset, you fight a little better. So he's like, here's what's going on. Oh, okay. Well, now I'm mad. Okay.
Yeah, so I was going to ask about that. Like, overall, do you like fighting a guy who you don't like, or do you prefer to fight guys who you actually have some respect for?
I mean, don't get me wrong. I still, even though he irritated me, I still have respect for Malcolm. He still got in there. He still fought, even though he came in 8 pounds freaking overweight. But, I mean, it puts a little bit of fire in your belly, I guess, whenever you're going in there. But, yeah, it helps.
So from what I saw on socials, there was even some uncertainty about whether Malcolm was going to be medically cleared to compete on February 17th. Were you concerned about if the fight was even going to actually happen when it was supposed to?
On a week's notice, I was from day to day, like, not sure if I was fighting or not. And that was the thing that kind of got under my skin the most. You know, for 8-9 weeks, whatever, you know, you knew you were going to, you signed a contract. You knew you were supposed to fight me. You knew you were supposed to be at a certain weight. You knew you were supposed to be cleared from your last fight. And he just, you know, he's a 24-year-old kid. That was a problem, I think.
Speaking of fight week itself, like, is it hard to be motivated during fight week when on a day-to-day basis, you don't know if he's going to come in on weight or be actually able and medically cleared to compete?
No, it really wasn't hard. I knew I had a job to get in there and make the weight, and then after that, go out and win. And that was pretty much what was all on my mind. I mean, yeah, in the back of my head, I was like, man, I'm going to be really bummed if he doesn't show up or doesn't get cleared or whatever, because, you know, it's potentially my last one.
Right. So how about when he does miss weight? I know it wasn't a small weight miss either. You mentioned 8 pounds. any chance of the fight falling through on the day of after weigh-ins? I'm sure there was a conversation there.
I mean, as soon as I got there, I had Scott Corbin, the matchmaker, coming up and telling me, you know, hey, he's over this much, you know, let's see what you weigh. I got on, I was 125. And basically after that, I called my coach, Andrew Law, and was like, okay, well, what do you want me to do? Do you want me to fight or do you want me to scratch it? And he's basically said, I'll leave it up to you. I wanted to fight no matter what. I didn't care if he was 10 pounds overweight. I just wanted to fight.
So were you even shocked when you arrived and Scott Corbin told you, hey, he's over and it's by 8 pounds?
No, because it's funny, you know, the rankings just came out for Ohio, you know, and it said Malcolm was 19th at like flyweight. And I think I was 15th like overall. And I kind of chuckled because on Tapology and any website, he's never made the weight. And I said that from the get-go. I said, I don't think he's going to make 125. I mean, it's whatever. Like, I'll make it. But he never made it. And, I mean, even guys that are ranked above me have never even made weight for 125. It kind of cracks me up.
You had some words for Malcolm inside the cage after he tapped. What did you say to him in the moment?
Well, the first thing I said when I got up was, you definitely ain't getting no hugs from me. Because it was, I don't know, a couple minutes after we did our interviews and he was back on social media saying he hoped he wasn't going to get hugged for 9 minutes. Dude, I definitely am not in there to hug nobody. I hugged your freaking neck and you tapped super quick.
Yeah, that he did. Were you able to squash the beef afterward or do you still hold anything against him and you'll just never really see eye to eye with a guy like Malcolm?
I don't think I'm ever going to see eye to eye with him. He got right back on social media. And I'm not really sure how you pop off after you got beat. I mean, saying how fast his hands were and whatnot. And I mean, it's whatever. I mean, he hit me with like one clean shot in 6 minutes or whatever, 3 minutes, whatever it was. You know, he's an idiot.
So in terms of the fight itself, man, you mentioned you didn't want to go in there and hug him at all, but what was the game plan going in, knowing that he had advantages not only in height and reach, but he also didn't make weight, so that was another feather in his cap?
I make 125 pretty easily, but I'm a pretty stocky 125er, so I figured if I got a hold of him, there was going to be a little bit of a strength advantage. But I knew he had really snappy kicks, really snappy punches. He's a really good boxer, actually. I mean, he throws punches. The first jab he threw out there was stiff. And, I mean, it hit me quick. I was like, oh, man. But the game plan is always pretty much the same. You know, go in, close the distance, and if I get a chance, wrestle, throw judo or something in there, some jiu-jitsu. And it's just a different face every time, really. There's not really... I'm short, so I'm going to have to close the distance on everybody. So, but that's what it was. I just needed to close the distance on him, look for an opening, and that's what I did. He didn't like anything I did to him for those 2 minutes, whatever it was.
So from what I remember, you jumped on that guillotine choke, which can be a risky thing in MMA. Did you know you had that locked in and it would be enough to finish the fight before the first round ended?
Actually, I didn't. It wasn't even in my mind to think about that. Like, I heard like my coach kind of talking to me a little bit, and Malcolm went in for a little shot, and I kind of was just defending it. And I heard I stuck my arm around his neck just kind of to keep him off, and I heard it's there. I'm like, okay. I think he said short time too. I heard my coach Ben saying it's there. So I just jumped up on it. I'm like, well, what's the worst that's going to happen? It's like 10 or 15 seconds left. I'll just defend if I have to. And as soon as I jumped into it, I knew I had it. I'm like, it's done.
Did it surprise you at all that he went for a shot and he had you up against the cage like that?
Yeah, because he was talking smack about people wrestling and jiu-jitsu. And it is what it is with that. I just think he's a young kid kind of popping off at the mouth. But if he'd actually get serious about stuff, he might actually be a pretty good fighter.
So considering everything that we just talked about with this fight, the finish, the beef, everything like that, did it just make the win feel that much better when you secured the first round finish the way you did?
It did. I mean, whenever somebody is kind of, you know, I mean, in the first place, if someone signs a contract to fight you, they're saying they think they could beat you. So right there, you know, and then whenever they get cocky or popping off, it's always nice to kind of shut somebody up, which he still didn't shut up. But I mean, I went out and did my job and did what I said I was going to do. I backed up everything I said I was going to do.
Yeah, that you did, man. And you made it look good there in the first round. You were pretty fired up after the win. It looked like you were prepared to go all three rounds if needed. Did you have a major adrenaline dump after the fight, or how long were you on cloud nine, per se, after the win?
After every fight, whether I win or lose, and they're like, you get out of the cage and you're pulled in about 90 different directions because you got all these people that want to talk to you. And especially if you win, you have more people who you don't even know want to talk to you. It was quite a while, but I wanted to get out, and I actually like went up and found a spot so I could watch Garrett fight right after I was done. So,
yeah. And how about that fight? Garrett taking down Gates Cook almost every round and getting that decision win.
Dude, Garrett is oh my God, dude, that kid and Hunter and Brogan, like those are the three that I think you're going to have to watch. Like from our gym, they're coming up. Garrett's like a dedicated young kid. I wish I would have been that dedicated like he was when I was his age. I'd be in a completely different spot if I was. But like that kid comes in, he just grinds every day. He goes to judo, he goes to jiu-jitsu, he goes to freaking MMA box, you know, everything. The kid's just a worker. And it's the same thing with Hunter and Brogan. Like Brogan's probably one of the better wrestling coaches I've ever been around. And he's a young kid, like he's younger than me. I'm the oldest guy in the gym, I think, besides like Tommy.
Yeah, man, you mentioned Garrett, and I had a few words with him after his fight too. And I just talked to him, and he said he wanted to grapple, but he was still almost like not ashamed of his performance, but he wants to put it all together in his next one. And you know that when you put on a performance like that and you're still not happy with it, you know you're going to be great one day. And I feel like that's the thing with Garrett that I get away from him.
He's never satisfied with himself.
Yeah.
Like he comes out and it's the same thing. He wants a knockout so bad. It's hilarious almost. But after when he lost back in, when was that?
Like in December. Yeah.
Yeah. I could hear him coming up the ramp, just mattering the freaking wet hen. Just, oh gosh, I should have did this, I should have did that. I'm like, okay, I'm not going around Garrett for a while. Like, he's almost as mad at himself when he wins than when he loses. It's he's really hard on himself, but he's a really good kid.
Yeah, that is, man. I think that's the mindset you have to have as an amateur. That way you continue to grow, and then you're ready for that pro debut in the pro ranks too. And I think Garrett's going to have a lot of success when he does make that move one day. Talking with Nick the Gremlin Loot on Forged in Ohio. All right, Nick, you've had some time to think about it. Was that your last fight against Malcolm Jackson?
There was talk literally right after I was done fighting. Somebody asked, is he really done? And there's talks of it not being, but right now it kind of is, at least in Ohio, because for people who don't know, you have to get like a couple of medical like scans or something whenever you reach 35, which is old in MMA. And as much as I'd love to be able to like fund that, I would. But I personally don't have the funds to be able to go do those scans. So there has been talk about trying to find some sponsors and things like that. And there's even been talk of trying to win one more and then turning pro, actually. But, you know, it's all kind of just talk right now. Right now, I'm kind of focused on my coach Andrew Law's fight in March. And then we have a bunch of people fighting, I think, here. In a couple weeks, I think, or no, April. Is that the next card? April 6th is the next. We have a bunch of people fighting on that too. So Maybe. I guess I don't have like a really great answer for you because it's kind of uncertain for me. I am getting up there though, man. Like these camps get a little harder. Making 25 was even a little harder this time. Like that was the other thing that kind of got under my skin, I guess, about Malcolm is 5 a.m. on fight day, I was in plastics running on a treadmill. I don't know what he did for his fight, and it is what it is. But man, when I'm putting in the work, it's really just a total bummer that you, it seems like you didn't even try.
Yeah, you're an amateur fighter, but you act like a true pro in this game, man. And I respect that entirely. But, you know, talking about retiring in the process of deciding whether to retire or not, if, you know, the whole funds in Ohio, all that kind of stuff, if that was out of the window, would you say that you would want to fight again if none of that was really an issue?
If that wasn't an issue, I probably would fight again. Yeah, I'll fight until I really don't want to anymore. I mean, and right now, like, especially coming off a win, you want to fight again. Like, I probably would have fought if they would have sent someone else right in the cage after Malcolm was done. I would have fought him too. I don't know. There's something different about people who fight or even do like martial arts or let's say wrestling too. Like they're all the combat sports. You're kind of like a little nutty to go in there and want to get beat up or slammed in wrestling or whatever all the time. And I'm just feel like I always want to do it. I mean, I think my coaches and the people in that gym are the same way. Like we do all just like to compete. I mean, we're competing with each other all the time in practice too.
So does the thought of trying to, you know, fight for another amateur championship that has eluded you or retiring after a pro debut so you can say that you were a pro athlete, do things like that ever come to your mind in terms of getting those done before you call it quits?
I think I said before I fought Luke, I mean, that's always kind of been the goal to get like a belt or something or turn pro. I mean, if I could turn pro, it would be really cool just because there's a little bit more of a money aspect that would be able to help me to continue fighting. Winning a belt is kind of always on my mind because it would just be cool to do. I mean, we have all of our belts hanging up in our gym for everybody to like to see. And I'm not going to lie, it kind of burns me every time I walk in that gym now to not see my belt hanging up there. Yeah. So it's something I'd like to probably try to get before it's all said and done, but that's up to Scott, I guess.
I mean, speaking to you right now, man, I still feel like you have that fire to compete. And, you know, while the complications of the fight game might make your last fight, it sounds like to you, man, you want to keep doing this.
Yeah. Like I'll be done when I'm done. I mean, I don't know when that'll come. I won't say any names, but other people have talked about retiring and what we're going to do when we're done and this and that. But I don't know. I don't know if I'll ever be done.
Yeah.
Some way, shape, or form I'm going to be involved in, and I know that.
You posted on Facebook, and this was kind of crazy, your first and potential last fights both took place at the Chaparral's Event Center. Both of your opponents missed weight, and you choked them both out in the very first round. How incredible is that, man? It's like a storybook ending if it is the end of your career.
It did. It made me chuckle. It made my coach, Andrew Law, kind of laugh, too, because whenever I came in my debut fight at Chaparral, dude, I was so skinny. I remember Andrew telling me, I never thought I'd have to tell a grown man to make, like, to put on weight for 125. Like they were razzing me so hard. And then I got in there and they're like, oh, your guy's like 3 pounds overweight. I'm like, okay. And now we kind of like think about it a little more, fighting people who are not on weight. But yeah, it was fun. And like you said, it was kind of like a storybook ending, like exactly how it went in. It was funny, like different aspects of the fight were the same. Like as soon as I got out of my debut fight, the kid that I beat was like, oh, hey, you did a really good job, but you know, you kicked me in the junk. And I'm like, no, I didn't. And kind of the same thing with Malcolm. Like, he got kneed in the junk. I think he just wanted a little break. So. The only difference was I think the first guy was just a little bit more respectful.
Yeah, I guess so. Sort of like, does that come into your decision making whether to retire or not, knowing that it was a storybook ending if it is the end, and that you're coming off a win rather than actually going out on a loss?
Yeah, after I fought Luke, I was kind of like thinking about being done too, because I was like, man, I just got freaking clipped in 25 seconds and questions a lot of things like, you know, do I still got it? You know, I can't hang with all these young kids. It's nice to come off of a win. And I think that's probably what's going to keep me always fighting. Like, if I'm coming off a win, I'm riding that high and I want to keep going. And if I lose, then I don't want to be done because I can't go out on a loss. That's just the way I am. I don't know. Maybe that's like little man syndrome or something.
No, I think that's completely understandable. I understand it. I'm sure your peers in mixed martial arts understand it as well. So I'm sure you've experienced those up and downs in your career. You mentioned the Luke Shokan fight too. I mentioned on the broadcast in your last fight and just the fact that you've never dropped three fights in a row. What was the key for you to persevere through those times and be active in MMA for 10 plus years?
Well, yeah, I've never dropped three in a row. Dropping two in a row. I think I dropped two in a row once, maybe twice. As far as keeping going, like, I think it's just like what I just said in your last question, man. Like, I don't like to lose. I don't like to lose in practice, really, even. So I'm just like too competitive. So if I were to drop one, I'm automatically like, I would go on spurts where I wouldn't be in the gym. And that's what killed me over the years. But, I would automatically like Andrew would be in my ear. Hey, you want to fight again? And I'm automatically back in the gym for that set amount of time to train and fight. I guess I just don't like to lose.
Yeah, who does, you know?
No, I mean, it's been 10 years, man. That's wild to think about.
Does it seem like it's gone faster than that?
Yeah, there's been a lot of kind of hiccups in my career, to say the least. Some personal stuff that kind of stopped me from progressing the way that I probably should have. Like, in all actuality, I probably should be a professional fighter right now. But, yeah. You know, past is the past, I guess.
Yeah, definitely. I know it's still very fresh and the answer could change. I know you're not officially done yet, but just looking back on your career, do you have any of those regrets or wish you did anything differently that I know, you know, some other fighters at the top of their game sometimes do have?
I have a couple fights I wish I wouldn't have taken, but I mean, they were kind of like the one that sticks out a lot, I think, is I fought, what is his name? He's from Pittsburgh. I think his name was AJ something, AJ Wilkins. And I like literally just picked him up on a whim. I just beat Dante Penicizio, who I think at the time was like one of the top guys in the Midwest. And it was like a big split decision win. And I wanted to get in right after. And I was actually trying to fight Nikolai Gianti at the time, who was the 125 pound champ. And I think he was going pro, or he was possibly turning pro at the time. So they're like, oh, well, that fight's not going to happen. They're like, well, you want to fight this guy? And I'd never really fought like a really kind of tall, like good wrestler. And after that, I kind of got like super bummed. Like I lost to him. I think he took my back and I couldn't get him off. And he just like got a TKO win on me. I wish I wouldn't have taken that fight. And I wish I wouldn't have taken like Chris Smith, who was a guy that actually trained with us. I didn't even like that fight. And I got choked completely unconscious in that one because just because he had a really good choke in that one. I wish I wouldn't have taken that one either.
So is that a common theme through your career? I know you shouldn't have taken those fights and that's your regret, but just in terms of difficulty finding opponents and potential opponents that you wanted to fight, turning pro, and then you lose out on that opportunity.
Yeah, it's hard finding a grown man that weighs 125 pounds too. So that's always a problem. And as far as like finding people, there's not many active 125ers around here, man. And like I said before in the rankings, the people who are ranked above me, except I think Dom, haven't made 125. Jimmy's number one. And as far as I've researched about him, he's had one fight that was supposed to be at 125, which was with Malcolm, and then it didn't happen for whatever reason. But it didn't happen at 125, I guess, is what I meant to say.
Yeah, you're good, man. So speaking of, you know, not taking fights that you maybe should have or things like that, you know, learning how to cope with those losses, but also just like the lessons that you learn from losing, what did you learn most as a mixed martial artist through the 10 years or maybe even more so as a man throughout fighting for as long as you did?
Well, like something I had to try to do in this last fight with Malcolm, I've tried to learn to be more calm about things. I mean, you can see in my fight with Luke, like I was throwing everything into every punch, you know, and I was missing every time. I was just trying too hard. So I think with a lot of things anymore, even in my personal life, like I'm trying to just chill out, like be calm, take a step back, you know, assess the situation and progress from there.
And even when it comes to your last fight, you mentioned how you could hear your corner tell you that the choke was there, the choke was there, and then you knew to go for that guillotine. Is that an example of how you have been able to calm down in these fights? Just the fact that you can hear your corner and respond to their advice like in a split second like that?
Yeah. I probably am the most frustrating person to probably coach for a lot of different reasons, but I am like borderline deaf. Like I can't hear for crap. I will you all day long whenever you try to talk to me. So I was actually surprised that I heard him, but Ben's got kind of a big mouth. So you'll be able to hear him. I mean, across the cage, but I can kind of pick him out sometimes, but yeah, like calm down. Like I was calm the entire fight back against the cage. I was listening to what they were saying the whole time. And that's what I tried to do anyways. I tried to put him over toward my corner, because I'm deaf and I can't hear my coaches.
Fair enough, man. When you look at your 12 fights, six of which went your way, do you have a favorite fight or performance of yours in your career?
It's either, well, man, it's like three fights. One of, I don't know if I can say my favorite. One of my favorites is I fought George Murphy for Matt Trukovich back in, I don't even know what year it was, but that's another fighter who's like, if you look at his record, you're like, eh. But dude, he got in and we tried to kill each other for like, I think it was like about 2 minutes. I mean, you can get on YouTube and watch the video. We were throwing everything but the kitchen sink at each other. So that was an awesome fight. Beating Dante Penicizio whenever he was highly ranked in the Midwest was really cool. That was one that I literally ended on his back. And when the bell or the horn went, I dropped off. I'm like, oh, thank God. And it was like such a satisfying win because I didn't know if I won that fight. And then my other one is a 13-second knockout I got from the only fight at Moose Island down here, like close to my home. It's in Yorksville. I went out and that kid, another kid who missed weight, kneed me right in the sternum. And my first thought was, oh, I'd never been kneed before. I was like, oh, that really hurt. I don't want that to happen again. I just threw everything into like three punches and he dropped. I'm like, well, that was easy. I should just do that every time.
I love it, man. You have like one of everything in there. You have an absolute war, a 13-second knockout, and then a fight that went your way, but you didn't really know if it was going to go your way. I love that mix of three fights there.
They were all fun. I liked every fight, even the ones I lost. Like, there were good aspects of it. It's just, like I said before, man, I just like to fight. And not even in a way that it's like, you know, puffing your chest out, you want to go fight. It's, fighting is relaxing for me. And I guess that goes back to what I said before. I feel like those guys that kind of have that similar mindset of me in the gym, like, when you go in there and they shut the door and it's just you and the guy across the cage from you, it's just calming. Like it's the most in the moment thing you can do, in my opinion. One of the most in the moment things you can do.
Yeah, I love that description. I don't think that's one I've heard yet on Forged in Ohio. And I know the career isn't completely done, but what do you want to be remembered for when it comes to you and what you were able to do as a fighter?
I just like to put on exciting fights, man. Like, I remember when I came out of retirement and I walked into the weigh-in room to fight Dylan Bush, and I stepped up on the scale and somebody I didn't even really know looked, he's like, whoa. He's like, you're fighting? I'm like, yeah. I'm like, why? I'm like, thinking, I don't even know this kid. He's like, oh, dude. He's like, you always put on good fights. You're so exciting to watch. Da, da, da. Like, that's what I like, man. I like to go out. You know, there was a friend that used to train with us. He passed away a couple years ago. But something I always remembered him saying when he was in the gym was, you know, we don't, as amateurs, we don't fight for money because you don't make that much money as an amateur. We fight for the cheers and the applause. And like that really set in because you do, man. Like when you get that big pop from the crowd, if you pull off a win or you land something good, it just, you feel your adrenaline just rev up. It's awesome.
Yeah, and I think you did a great job of delivering just that in your career. Once again, joined by Nick the Gremlin Loot with us on Forged in Ohio. So you kind of mentioned it a little bit earlier, and I know still might not be an end to your career, but what does your career look like post-fighting, and do you think you'll be even more involved heavily at Route 250?
Post-fighting, I'm going to try to stay as active in the gym as humanly possible so I can be there for my teammates. Like I said before, something that I kind of regret in my career in general was I'd come into the gym, then I'd take like too long of a layoff. I'd come back in, I'd fight again, I'd take a layoff. I just really wasn't that great of a partner. So it's something that I want to do different as, you know, an older guy in the gym, you know, be there for my coaches who are still fighting, all the young guys who are still fighting who have that opportunity to maybe do something with their career if they want to, or just be in there in general. Like all those guys in there, like they're not just teammates. They're my friends. Some of them are close as family, man. Like I come to those guys with a lot of problems and I just want to be in there for them now and stay active for them so that they can possibly do something. And there's several guys in there that can.
Yeah, absolutely. Do you see yourself as a coach one day?
I mean, if somebody wants me to coach him or corner him, I'll buy the license and I'll do it. How much good advice I'll give, but you know.
I imagine that you're more stressed when you see your teammates or peers at Route 250 compete more than you when it's you out there.
Law was laughing at me whenever I watched Jared Patterson's last fight because it was just me and Law went to corner him. I didn't corner him. Andrew did. But before the fight, Jared's like calm, sitting. I'm like pacing back and forth. Andrew's like, are you sure you're not fighting? Like, you look like you're ready to fight. I'm like, oh, dude, I'm like, I'm so excited. I just like being around him, man. I stress over my teammates fighting. Like one of the worst things whenever you're on the same card with your teammates is I'm sitting in the back and I'm trying to like focus in on what I need to do. And I want to come out and watch so-and-so fighting or, you know, all that. You get distracted real quick. So I have to like stay in the back and then I feel like a bad teammate hiding in the back.
Yeah, I totally get it. I've asked fighters too in the past, like, hey, do you like going to war with your teammates fighting on the same card? And some people do, but other people find it a distraction and it's hard to find that even middle. So I totally understand you on that one. You've mentioned your head coach, Andrew Law, a couple times, fighting coming up here in March, I believe. What do you think of that fight? And do you think he is going to get the job done?
It's going to be a tough fight. Dude, that guy looks like a freaking a Spartan or something, and he's a black belt in jiu-jitsu, but I never count out Andrew. He always has something tricky up his sleeve, and I really think his judo is something that a lot of people can't handle. And then he's got a really good ground game as well. He's longer. I see Andrew pulling out a W. I think it's going to be a hard fight, but I can see him dumping this guy on his head too.
I'd love to see it for Ohio MMA, man. That's for sure. I've had Garrett Hershberger and Hunter Watts out of Route 250 on the show before, two very talented fighters. You, of course, have mentioned Brogan Endress and Andrew Law, but who are some other guys at the gym, maybe like a David Moore perhaps, that more people should be aware of?
Definitely watch David. David's going to be interesting. I'm glad he got his win because he was on a two-fight skid, and that definitely didn't show his capability. When I say that kid flattened me in the gym when we were sparring one time, I'm not like he put me on my hind end, lay in there, go, oh man. Whew. There's another kid coming up that I'm really excited to see fight because he's a little scrappy wrestler like me, Bobby Smith. He's fighting, I think, in April. So he's going to be one to watch, I think. Who else? There's Jason Kreitz is coming up. He's kind of a new guy. We're going to see what he's going to do. He's got some decent boxing. Yeah, man, Kyle Crum, he got his last fight scratched. He just came to 250. Everybody's good in there, man. Like, I mean, I'd watch everybody from 250, to be honest. Like, there's not a single guy in there that's like, oh, he's an easy fight. Like, I think everybody in that gym is tough in their own aspect to beat.
You did your part in terms of getting 10 points with a first round finish for the Cage Thunder Cup. Route 250 currently leads all gyms in the competition. Are you confident that the gym has the guys to make sure that prize goes to Route 250 at the end of the year?
Oh yeah. Like I said, man, every guy we send out there to fight is a killer in their own aspect. Like, I don't think there's one guy that I wouldn't send out and put my money on to think that they're going to win.
Yeah, that's a great point, man. It's a testament to the gym and what Andrew Law has done there at Route 250 Martial Arts. Before we wrap up, Nick, just is there anything you want to shout out or plug here or say here at the back end of the podcast?
I just want to thank everybody at 250, man. You know, they've, like I said, I've been a little bit of a difficult person to deal with probably over the years. But I don't think there's ever been a time, whether we were at 250 or any of the other places that we trained at, that all those guys didn't have my back. So I just really want to thank all of them. Thank my friends and family for support over the years. You know, I've had a lot of people come just on a lot of Saturday nights to watch me get in, get my hind end kicked, or, you know, sometimes come out with a win. But, you know, over 10, whatever years it's been, had a lot of fun, you know. Thank you to all those people.
Well, thanks again, Nick, for joining me. It was a pleasure to be on the call for your most recent fight, and the scene of you getting the win against Malcolm was pretty remarkable. Before I let you go, I like to get my guests out of here by doing the OHIO chant. So, OHIO. Thanks, Nick. Thanks again for coming on the show. Congrats again on the big win, and we'll talk again down the line whether it was your last or not.
Right on, man. Thanks.
That was Nick the Gremlin Lute, the 6-6 amateur mixed martial artist. I have a ton of respect for Nick, and how couldn't you as a fan of mixed martial arts? He debuted over 10 years ago, persevered through the ups and downs of the fight game, and has been a true pro every step of the way. That's going to do it for episode 68 of Forged in Ohio. Don't forget to download episodes wherever you listen to podcasts and check out the show on YouTube as well. Like the video and don't forget to subscribe to the channel. And for more updates, follow at Forged in Ohio on both Instagram and Facebook. Let me know if there are any other fighters from the most recent Cage Thunder card that you want to hear from on the show. Thank you all for watching or tuning in. I've been your host, Jake Murin, and this was Forged in Ohio.